We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Go Huskies podcast is presented by Air Van Moving, the official mover of Husky Athletics and your next move.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to another edition of the Go Huskies podcast. It's a podcast exclusive, Remembering 1991, Episode 2. All right, today is the 30th anniversary of the game against Nebraska. The 4th-ranked Huskies went on the road to take on the 9th-ranked Cornhuskers in Lincoln, and it didn't start out so well as Nebraska jumped out to a halftime lead that would become 21-9 midway through the third quarter. But back came the Dogs, 27 unanswered in order to get the win. And today we're going to talk to a guy that played a big role in not only getting that win done, but all 12 that season en route to a national championship. Wide receiver Mario Bailey, one of my favorite conversations I've had since coming to the UW, and really having a chance to get into not just what this Nebraska game meant, but all the stories about that Rose Bowl run, and even leading up to why'd he strike the pose after that touchdown against Michigan in the Rose Bowl on January 1st, 1992. Mario Bailey's fantastic. He works with the Seahawks right now. He's a great Husky. He's so good in meeting up with the school, the team, and even had a chance to talk to Jimmy Lake's club earlier this year. So we talk about all that right here in episode number 2 of Remembering 1991. Ladies and gentlemen, Mario Bailey.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, the great Mario Bailey joining me here on Remembering 1991. Looking back 30 years later at the last time the Huskies won a national championship. Mario, thanks for the time. So good to see you. So good to talk to you. And gosh, can you believe 30 years? It's been 30 years since that great run in 1991.
No, I can't believe it, because that would make me something. I try not to think about it like that.
Well, hey, thank you for the time. It's really cool to see you. And, you know, let's kind of start with we're going to be airing this on the anniversary of the Nebraska game. Game 2, it was week 3 as you kind of started the season down in Palo Alto. You hammer the Cardinal to open things up 42-7, but then you have kind of a weird week 2 bye going into this huge top 10 showdown in Lincoln. What do you remember going into that game? Because I would imagine at the time there probably is a ton of hype for a road non-conference top 10 showdown.
I remember Nebraska, growing up, Nebraska and Oklahoma, teams like that were like great teams, knowing who Coach Osborne was. But I also remember that we penciled it as the game, if we won that game, that we could win the national championship. Hmm. So it was a blessing that we had an extra week, because with Coach James, if you have an extra week to prepare for anybody, that means we're going to come most of the time and dominate, and we'll be prepared for everything they're throwing at us, because Coach James was so meticulous and about the detail of every game. So that we had that extra time was bad for them and great for us.
What do you remember about Coach James that week?
The same as everybody on the team, is this is it. You know, you could with Coach James, for the most part, it was on to the next opponent, but everybody knew that that was the game, you know, especially going on the road, going to Nebraska. We were just prepared, and practice was intense. Practice was always intense, but it was a little more intense and long. I just remember practice being a lot longer, and coaches, what would I call it? Like he was going for no nonsense.
Yeah.
Like it was like, Every little thing you did, you were going to hear about it.
I know it's been 30 years, but do you recall the feeling of being in that Thursday speech before you got, you know, on a plane and headed to Lincoln?
I do. And I just remember, because, like I said, I was a college football fan, and watching Turner Gill and those guys, Mike Rozier playing, watching Nebraska growing up, like it was intense that we were even going to be playing in Nebraska and playing against Coach Osborne. So it was intense for everybody. And like I said, we were prepared. We were preparing for Nebraska in spring of 1990.
that's a lot of preparation, right? That's yeah. A lot of looking forward to a big game. And so
spring, excuse me.
Yeah, but regardless, I mean, 6 months, yeah. you got a game circled yeah. on the calendar. You know the opportunity that lies before you. And when you think about, you know, that plane ride, you touch down in Lincoln the night before, you're going through all the preparation and everything else. You know, I think the Pac-10 back then, the Pac-12 now, is one of the great travel leagues in the country. You go to so many amazing cities. There's so many cool stadiums with great vistas and outlooks and all this stuff. But when you're going into the cornfields in flat Nebraska and 80,000 wearing red and that whole setting, what do you remember about walking into Memorial Stadium for that big game?
Well, I remember going into Nebraska that everything was red and everything was Cornhusker. Like, it was like you are really in Cornhusker country. Like, excuse me. You could not imagine that every gas station was Cornhusker, every store was Cornhusker, everything was red. And walking in there, it was crazy. Again, it was all red and the fans were nice, but to this day, I've played in a lot of stadiums, NFL, NFL, Europe, CFL, XFL, every FL, college. That is the loudest place. That and Kansas City Chiefs are the loudest two places I've ever played in my.
That's really interesting. Middle of the country, middle America, gets pretty rowdy, which it's funny because it was the next year at home against Nebraska when we set the decibel record for the loudest stadium any college football stadium's ever gotten. And it's still to this day the loudest stadium any stadium has ever gotten. But the loudest you remember playing in was in Lincoln.
Well, you don't count home. I mean, I feel like at home, it was always loud. But on the road, we had to have hand signals. And I remember having to hear Billy to actually go to him and have him tell me to play, because I couldn't hear him even in the huddle.
Hmm. Wow. Absolutely crazy. Okay, so let's talk about this game a little bit. It's top 10. Whole country's watching. Huge showdown. And it doesn't really start out great for the Dogs. You know, I mean, Nebraska has kind of a successful first half. They go into the locker room leading 14-6. And then early in the third quarter, they're able to answer with a short field. They got the ball at like the 2-yard line and they punch it in. And it's 21-9 in the middle of the third quarter. Then what happened?
We just woke up. it wasn't like we were sleeping, but we woke up and they weren't doing anything special. It was our own doing that they were, why they were leading the game. And once we had a few plays, it just snowballed effect. It was over from there. We woke up and punched them in the mouth. That's just the bottom line. And they couldn't take that punch. And once we seen they couldn't take the punch, I think Jay Berry's last touchdown was just the icing cake. But they gave us all they had, and it wasn't enough. And once we showed them, it was a wrap.
Do you remember maybe somebody with a rah-rah speech on the sideline or something that woke you up when it's 21-9, you're down, middle of the third quarter, you're down by 12, you know, you got to hit it now on the road, the crowd's rowdy and all this stuff. Do you remember like a turning point that occurred for the Huskies on the road that day?
Only thing I can remember is like a fourth down play. Like we got a fourth down, and once we got that next score, when we got the next score, you could see everybody on the bench like, okay, let's go. And like I said, it just snowballed effect. When we scored to make it, I guess, 21-16 maybe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Once that happened, we knew it was what was going to happen from then on.
Remarkable. What do you remember about that defense? Because they shut out Nebraska for the rest of the game, and then they didn't give up a touchdown for like four more weeks. Like, what do you remember about that defense that year?
I just remember the defense like our team. It's almost like a competition with each other to see who's going to make the next big play. Mm. You know, it's like they're competing with each other to see who's going to make the play. And when you have a team that's competing with each other, against each other, everybody's like ravaging dogs. Like literally they're out there to destroy and make plays. And that's what you're seeing. You're just seeing this play being made, this sack, this fumble recovery, this fumble cause, this interception, because everybody's trying to make a play. And from that point on, it's, you know, they were without a doubt the best defense in the country.
Yeah.
Ever in college football.
Yeah, holding opponents under 10 points a game, just utterly dominant. And whatever woke them up in the second half of that game, whether it was Bean O'Brien's 15-yard touchdown run, Jay Berry obviously had the nail in the coffin later, but something sparked that defense to not give up anything the rest of the game. And, of course, we all know the rest of the story. Huskies come back and win 36-21 in Lincoln to set sail on the national championship voyage off to a 2-0 start. But you're talking about making plays. And, man, very few people on that team made more plays than you. You had a school record 18 touchdown receptions that year. And you did it with a quarterback that you didn't build a whole lot of chemistry with until spring ball, because Mark Brunell, who was your quarterback the previous year, he goes down with a knee injury in spring camp. And then Billy Joe Hulbert takes the reins. As a wide receiver, what was it like trying to build that chemistry with Billy Joe? And what do you remember about him leading the way?
I just remember Billy was like in practice. If you came to our practice and seen Billy, you'd be like, oh God, these guys are in trouble. But I just know that when the big lights came on, like Billy's a gamer, he's ready to go. It's one of those amazing things. You hate to see it. Like you don't want practice to be bad or to look like that. But there's a difference between guys that can practice well and guys when those bright lights come on, who can shine. And Billy was just a straight up gamer. When the game time came, he was ready to go. And that's all I want, is I want to make sure that when we're ready to play in the game, that you're ready to go. And Billy proved it time and time again.
Well, you got to give me a story. Like why would somebody see Billy Joe in practice and be like, oh gosh, these guys are in trouble?
I don't even know if Billy knew how to throw a spiral in practice, you know? That ball was going end over end, and it just was never pretty in practice. It just, and you might not remember the play, but I swear when the game came, it was like a light switched and he was ready to go.
Some people got that ice water in the veins. You had it. He had it. That team had
exactly,
it.
Yeah.
That team absolutely had it.
Everybody doesn't have that, but Billy had that. We were worried. We were worried a little bit. But once the game started, then really it was the after Nebraska game. After Nebraska game, we were never worried.
You know, one thing that I'm always curious about is because I've gotten to experience it a little bit, being the play-by-play guy and being on the team plane, it's always kind of fascinating that ride home from a big road game and, you know, how quiet it can be after a tough loss, but how even late at night, how jubilant it could be and how noisy that plane could be after a win. Do you remember flying home from Nebraska that night?
Man, say it again. It's like that was it. You know, we were a sigh of relief, especially the game was tough. But what was even more pleasant that we always talk about is when we walked off that field, their fans gave us a standing ovation.
Wow.
That entire trip home, it's like most of the time you sleep for a long flight like that. But we were up laughing, talking. By the time we got to Seattle, we were falling asleep, but we had been up the entire plane ride just reliving the moment and talking about their fans and how we actually beat Nebraska. Because like I said earlier, Nebraska was a team to beat. They were a national powerhouse back then.
Yeah, for sure. So after that game, I mean, talk about rolling. 56-3 against Kansas State, 54-0 against Arizona, 48-0 against Toledo. What was it like being on the field when you're just cruising week after week like that?
Man, just fun times. And it was fun times for everybody because you talk about those games like Toledo. I didn't play after halftime. So you're getting to see all the second and third stringers. We're laughing on the sideline. We're enjoying getting to see the young guys get in there and play and make plays and coming to the sideline, high-fiving, dancing, doing all the things that Coach James probably didn't allow a few years prior, but all of a sudden he was allowing it because he couldn't help it because we were doing we were destroying teams and having too much fun. So
it's funny you say that because when you were saying it, the thought in my mind immediately was like, well, how did Don feel about that? How did the Dogfather feel about all that? But, you know, when you're rolling 50-0 every week, I guess you're still taking care of business.
Yeah, he couldn't help himself. You know, I tell people when I got to the University of Washington, we had to have the pro socks. Your socks had to be all the way up. You couldn't wear earrings. You couldn't have a beard. Your jersey had to be tucked in. If you look at that national championship team, our socks are down. We have black cleats. These guys are showing their abs. Their jerseys are tucked in. They're tapered on the muscles are showing. It changed everything, but it changed while we were winning.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, funny to think about the transitions from the late 80s to the early 90s and the style and the everything else. That was certainly a unique time. Hey, let's talk a little bit about, so after you stomp three straight opponents, then you go into this big game at Cal. And it's funny, I watched it recently on YouTube, and I think Brent Musburger did the game on TV, and he said, kind of an odd place for a big football game. We're in Berkeley, you know? Like, when was the last time there was a big game here in Berkeley? But they were good that year. They were, like, seventh in the country. You're going in number two or number three. And that might have been, like, you talked about the Nebraska game was the national game, but this might have been the Pac-10 game that year.
No question. I felt like even watching that film, if you look, it's probably Billy's worst game that he had. Hmm. I feel like we should have beat him probably by a couple more touchdowns, but Cal was a great team, and that was the closest game we had all year. Came down to the last play, but I never thought, and I still don't think it should have came down that far. I don't like to put anything off on Bill, but I just felt like Bill had a horrible game. We shouldn't have been in that position, but give Cal credit. They were a great team. They went on to win like in the Citrus Bowl or something, and they went and had a great season. But I never felt it should have been that close.
Well, you really didn't have another close game the rest of the year, except for SC. That was a low-scoring game, 14-3. You know, I know that you were talking about earlier the kind of the swag and the fun and the getting the backups in the second half and stuff. But what about a dogfight that was down in the Coliseum against the Trojans?
Same thing as it's Bill. Those were. If you go look statistically and just look at the games, the two games that worst games of the season for Bill were California and USC. What they didn't do was stop the run. And Bean O'Brien is just one of those people that he steps up to the plate every time there's a big game. He's going to make a big play. Thank God for our running game against SC. And, again, we have the best defense in the country, so they're not going to score on us. But the passing game, if you just look at it, was just not great. They stopped us in the pass, but they couldn't stop us in the run. And our defense just handled everybody handily.
Yeah, Bean O'Brien, 158 yards on the ground, had both the touchdown runs, and Washington beats SC 14-3. So then you take care of the Beavs, you take care of the Cougs, you're 11-0, you're going to the Rose Bowl. Now, I remember back in the day, you'd go to the Rose Bowl, what, like December 1st? Like, I mean, you were there forever, right? Like, I mean,
go 2 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah, you're there through Christmas. You're there. Basically, you get an apartment in Southern California. You put your feet up. You hang out. But you know that you're playing for something special. There's a national championship on the line, and you're playing against the Michigan Wolverines. And for you, their Heisman Trophy wide receiver in Desmond Howard. So heading into that Rose Bowl, What do you remember about being on the field, warming up that day, going into that game, knowing just what was at stake in the next 60 minutes?
Well, before the game, we got to do a few events with Michigan, and I just felt like Desmond was just nonchalant and almost disrespectful and disregarding to our team, me, and everybody else. And that probably was what sparked everything, just the disrespect and arrogance that they had. We were undefeated, we were Washington, and we were killing people, but they still had this over-the-top arrogance about them that they just thought they're just Washington. You know, we're playing at midnight, so people aren't watching us. We got to see Michigan every single week before we left the hotel they were on and doing their thing. So they're a national powerhouse, but we really are a national powerhouse, but nobody believed it. They definitely didn't believe it. So about time we got to the game, I had been in practice. I had been Desmond Howard in practice. I seen three guys over me, swarming me every single day. So I knew what was about to happen to him. And my only thought in that time was, if our passing game is on, we're going to destroy him just like we've destroyed everybody else. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. I mean, an iconic moment when you dive for a touchdown catch in the end zone, you stand up and you do the Heisman pose. I wonder in that moment, how much of what you just said had to do with your decision in that moment to kind of strike the pose. Just what do you think? Do you think you would have done that had you not spent that time doing the beef bowl with the Michigan team and all that other stuff in the week leading up to the game?
No. I feel like if he hadn't have been so arrogant and disregarding and just his personality at the time, I don't think it would have happened. You know, I had just seen him at the Bob Hope show. We were the two All-Americans there, and it's the same thing. It was more of a I just felt disrespected for our team. It wasn't a one-on-one thing. It was a team thing, just to let them know Washington was for real. And it just, like, give us our respect. Besides give me my respect, it was more like give us our respect.
Well, you know what? You won the heart of dog fans forever, and that was the 30th career touchdown reception for you, which is still 30 years later, a school record. What's it feel like to know that, like, your name is still etched in the record books here 30 years later?
It's actually crazy. You know, when you think about it, you think about all the receivers, the great receivers from John Ross to Reggie to Jerome to Dante Pettis, all these guys, Jermaine Kearse, that's a record, especially 30 years, especially with offenses and how pass happy everybody is now. You know, people lie and say, you know, I don't care if it's broken. Hey, I'm not going to lie. I love it. I told the team of the receivers yesterday, like, yeah, I hope you never break it. You know, come close. Come close like John Ross came with 17, but don't break it. I had a conversation with Jermaine Kearse. He had 29 touchdowns.
Yeah. So,
like, yeah, that's perfect. You got a Super Bowl. You need that. So, I'm happy to have it, and I love it. And I tell people it's a Pac-12 record, and I played in the Pac-10, so it's great.
Yeah, that's awesome. 18 touchdown catches in a single year, 1991. That's still a school record. And then the 30 in a career, also still a UW record. And just one of the great seasons and one of the great players in Husky history. Hey, so cool to talk to you, Mario. I really appreciate the time. It's fun to recollect on this 1991 season. Of course, we're airing this on the anniversary of the Nebraska game, but we're recording it just days before the team goes to Ann Arbor and takes on Michigan. And you had the privilege of talking to this Washington team in the locker room leading up to that Michigan game. How cool was that for you? And what wisdom did you have to impart?
Man, it's extraordinary to be able to talk to them. And especially after a loss like they had, I just told them that you just have to put in the work. You have to believe in yourself and you have to put in the work. You can't just show up on Saturdays. It doesn't work that way. You have to practice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday and be ready to go. And not to take advantage of this opportunity. You know, a lot of those college football players, this will be it for them. They're not going to go on to the NFL, but they will remember it like we're remembering 30 years later. They'll remember it for the rest of their lives. So make sure that they give it all they can and go out there, and that all their goals are still attainable except for an undefeated season. They can still win the Pac-12 North. They can still win a Pac-12 championship. They might have to sneak into a national championship, but it's all there. If you're going to lose one, losing the first one is the one you want to lose, and that they have to go earn Michigan's respect. I don't think Michigan respected them even before they lost to Montana. They probably have even less respect now, but to go into Michigan and earn their respect.
Well, hey, Mario, looks like you're doing great. You're with the Seahawks now. What are you doing with the Seattle NFL franchise?
My title is Director of Legends and Player Engagement. The word legend is just a word for former players. And so I work with the former players doing different things, helping have events here for them, keep them part of the organization, help them with all their foundations, golf tournaments and camps and things like that, do appearances with them. And I do the same with the players. I can help them with their camps, their 501s, help them with appearances and out in the community, getting them out in the community, doing different things. So just working with the former players and the players, a great, great job, great organization. God's been good to me.
Hey. So awesome to see. Hey, Mario, thanks for being a great former Husky and joining us to remember what a great 1991 run and staying involved and talking to the team and everything you do. Mario Bailey, the great Mario Bailey, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you. Go Dawgs.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.